Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So following up with a couple of medical questions from our previous discussions last week, I mentioned that we go through waves in this podcast. We were on the intelligence wave for a while. That was fun. Now we're back to talking about bodies, which I guess is more relatable maybe. But I mentioned in the last episode, and we talked about gallbladder surgery before, cholecystectomy. I had mine out like 7 years ago. The only major regret in my life, actually, and I always say that that's not to scare anyone away from the surgery, especially and certainly if it's medically indicated, but I feel like I kind of rushed into mine. And I've dealt with just years. I mean, every day, there's not a day that goes by in the 7 years since the surgery that I don't have some kind of symptom or cluster of symptoms that I didn't have before, and it makes me kind of annoyed and angry. But the worst one is definitely the bloating. I just get bloated really easily, and it can stick around for a long time. It seems to be that my stomach, my GI system, just has its own mind. And I think that rather than it having its own mind, what's actually happened is the gut-brain connection has stopped working as effectively as it should have. I guess in the normal course of events, when you eat food, you don't really feel much. You feel satiated, and your stomach, I guess, doesn't just kind of blow up or bloat out. But when it does, it can be very uncomfortable. You feel heavy, and not just kind of physically heavy or like your stomach is bigger, but you also feel it's hard to describe it. I'm sure for those who are bloated, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You feel gross, and you feel ugly, and you just don't feel like moving. You feel like just curling up on a couch and hiding away from the world until the bloating has passed. I've looked into this a little bit, and of course I was going to a doctor for a number of years, and the ultimate diagnosis was I'm going to have a hard time, impaired gastric accommodation and abdominophrenic dysinergia, which when I unpack those very large, long-sounding words, seem to come down to the idea that when we have bloating, sometimes it's because there really is actually a lot of air pushing up into the stomach, and your stomach is bulging out because there's a volume of gas pushing out upon it. And in this condition, about which relatively little seems to be known, it's actually more of a diaphragmatic thing. And that was really interesting to me because I never would have thought about the diaphragm as being connected with bloating. But I watched a YouTube video that kind of explained it pretty well. And it was showing how in normal, the diaphragm and the stomach kind of do this dance that when you eat and you don't feel really horribly bloated, the stomach kind of tucks itself in and allows you to, and the diaphragm is, you know, unconstrained and you can breathe. And that's why you don't have that awful feeling that I get after every time I eat, that you're struggling for breath, which is horrible when you already have asthma. I'm trying hard not to sound too much like a pity case, but I think I'm kind of failing today. But when you do have this condition, that dance between the diaphragm and the stomach, which is at the kind of neurological or brain gut brain connection level, doesn't work as it should, and none of those nice things happen. The stomach goes out and you look bad. You feel and look distended, and you have a hard time breathing because the operation of the diaphragm is impaired. So Herman and Corn, this seems like a really sticky condition simply because when you learn about it and your doctor diagnoses you with it, you say, all right, well, that makes sense. That kind of fits what I'm feeling. So what's the fix? And I read about a couple of very experimentary treatments emerging in Barcelona in the form of, I think, gut brain or something like that. Not hypnosis, but something along those lines of maybe physical therapy. but it seemed like a dead end. I couldn't find any actual treatment for it. So I'm curious to know, Herman and Corin, for those who have this, what do you guys know about this this condition? It seems to be something that's growing in clinical recognition, that we're moving away, that the world of gastroenterology is moving away from every time someone is distended, it's got to be because of gas and SIBO. And when they measure the volume of air in these people, I guess people like me, they find that, no, the air volume is actually totally normal. It's just that the muscles are not working in synchrony as they should be. So is there any hope since I last looked 3 years ago, Herman and Corin, in terms of treatments for this? And finally, the biggest concern I think that that I have about this thing is it makes you want to sometimes eat less because you know that eating is going to predictably make you bloated. So I'm very interested in learning what strategies one can employ. I've heard that it makes more sense to eat smaller meals. Any kind of foods in particular that I should be avoiding or eating? And what would you say, based on what's known so far and what the evidence suggests, for living with this uncomfortable form of bloating? Over to you, Herman and Corin.
Hey there, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And man, did our housemate Daniel give us a deep one to chew on today.
He really did. It is one of those topics that sounds simple on the surface. Bloating. Everyone has had it. But when you dig into the specific diagnoses Daniel mentioned, you realize we are talking about a fascinating and honestly quite frustrating glitch in the human operating system.
It is the ultimate ghost in the machine. You have the hardware, the organs, but the software, the gut-brain connection, is sending the wrong signals to the wrong muscles at the wrong time. Daniel mentioned his cholecystectomy from 7 years ago, and I think that is a crucial starting point because it highlights how a physical change can sometimes trigger a long-term functional breakdown.
Right, and it is not just about the surgery itself, but what happens after. Daniel was asking about impaired gastric accommodation and abdominophrenic dyssynergia. Those are mouthfuls, but they describe a very specific mechanical failure. Herman, let's start with the basics. What is actually happening when someone experiences abdominophrenic dyssynergia? Because Daniel mentioned it feels like his stomach has a mind of its own.
It really does feel that way. To understand it, you have to picture the abdomen as a pressurized cylinder. You have the diaphragm on top and the abdominal wall muscles in front. In a healthy person, when you eat, your stomach expands to accommodate the food. This is the gastric accommodation part. At the same time, your brain sends signals to your diaphragm to stay put or even move up slightly, and your abdominal wall muscles relax just enough to make room. It is a perfectly coordinated dance.
But in abdominophrenic dyssynergia, that dance becomes a mosh pit.
Exactly. Instead of the diaphragm relaxing and moving up, it paradoxically contracts and pushes down. At the same time, the abdominal wall muscles contract instead of relaxing. So you have the diaphragm pushing the contents of your abdomen down and out, and the abdominal wall pushing back. The result is that the internal organs have nowhere to go but forward. That is why the stomach distends so visibly. It is not necessarily that there is a massive amount of gas in there, though it feels like it. It is that the muscles are literally reshuffling your insides into a bloated shape.
That is such a key distinction. I think most people hear bloating and they think of fermentation or air. But Daniel was spot on when he mentioned that recent clinical evidence shows the volume of gas in these patients is often totally normal. It is a motor coordination problem. It is a behavioral response by the nervous system that has become hardwired.
And that brings us to the Barcelona research Daniel was asking about. Dr. Fernando Espiras and his team at the Vall d'Hebron Hospital have been the pioneers here. They used electromyography and something called abdominal plethysmography to actually map these muscle movements. They proved that in patients with this condition, the intercostal muscles, the ones between your ribs, and the diaphragm are overactive, while the lower abdominal muscles are underactive or poorly timed.
It is like a software glitch where the push and pull commands are swapped. But why does this happen 7 years after a gallbladder removal? Daniel mentioned he feels like his gut-brain connection just stopped working effectively. Is there a direct link between the cholecystectomy and this specific dyssynergia?
The link is often indirect but very real. It falls under the umbrella of what is called post-cholecystectomy syndrome, which affects approximately 10 to 20% of people who have their gallbladder removed. When you lose the gallbladder, you lose the reservoir for bile. Now, bile is constantly dripping into the small intestine. This can lead to changes in motility, changes in the microbiome, and increased visceral hypersensitivity. Recent studies have even looked at how the lack of the hormone FGF19, which is usually regulated by the gallbladder's bile storage, can mess with gut signaling.
So the system becomes more sensitive.
Precisely. If your gut becomes hypersensitive, even a normal amount of food or a tiny bit of gas feels like a massive intrusion. The brain perceives this as a threat or a major distension and triggers a defensive muscular response. Over time, that response, that paradoxical contraction of the diaphragm, becomes the default setting. The brain thinks it is helping, but it is actually creating the very distension the person is trying to avoid.
It is a feedback loop. You feel a tiny bit of pressure, your brain panics, and tells the diaphragm to push down to make room, which actually increases the pressure and makes the stomach look bigger, which then causes more distress. It is a vicious cycle. And Daniel mentioned the psychological side of it, feeling gross or ugly, which we know only tightens that gut-brain loop.
It is devastating because it is so visible. Unlike many internal issues, this one changes your physical profile in minutes. But the good news is that because it is a functional, learned behavior of the nervous system, it can often be unlearned. That is where the treatment options come in.
Let's talk about those. Daniel mentioned he saw things about biofeedback and physical therapy. If this is a coordination problem, how do you actually retrain a diaphragm? You can't exactly lift weights with it.
Well, in a way you can. The gold standard for treating abdominophrenic dyssynergia right now is diaphragmatic breathing combined with biofeedback. The Barcelona studies by Aspiros' group showed that when patients were shown real-time data of their muscle activity, like seeing a graph of their diaphragm contracting when it should be relaxing, they could actually learn to correct it. Biofeedback therapy shows significant improvement in symptoms for 60-80% of responsive patients.
But most people don't have access to an electromyography machine at home. So what does that look like for someone like Daniel in their daily life?
It starts with very specific diaphragmatic breathing exercises. But it is not just taking deep breaths, it is about retraining the abdominal wall to relax while the diaphragm moves correctly. You have to practice lying down, then sitting, then standing, and eventually while eating. The goal is to consciously inhibit that paradoxical contraction.
I remember reading about a technique where you place one hand on your chest and one on your belly. You want the hand on the belly to move out while the chest stays still. Is that the core of it?
That is the starting point. But for abdominophrenic dyssynergia, you also have to focus on the ribs. Many of these patients are chest breathers. They use their intercostal muscles too much, which pulls the diaphragm out of position. You have to learn to breathe into the lower back and sides of the ribs. There is a specific drill called the rib cage relaxation drill. You place your hands on your lower ribs and try to breathe so that your ribs widen sideways rather than your chest moving up.
And the timing is everything, right? If you do this right when the bloating starts, can you actually abort the distension?
Yes. That is exactly what the clinical evidence suggests. If you catch it early, you can use the breathing to reset the muscle tone. It is like hitting the reset button on a computer that is starting to lag, but it takes a lot of practice. We are talking about doing these exercises for 10 to 15 minutes, 3 times a day, for weeks before the new pattern becomes automatic. Using a mirror can also help. If you stand sideways and watch your stomach, you can often see the exact moment the dyssynergia kicks in, which gives you a visual cue to relax the abdominal wall.
What about the other half of the puzzle? The impaired gastric accommodation. If the stomach itself isn't relaxing to let food in, does the breathing help with that too, or is that a separate issue?
They are definitely cousins. Gastric accommodation is more about the smooth muscle of the stomach itself, which is controlled by the autonomic nervous system. When food enters, the top part of the stomach, the fundus, is supposed to relax. If it stays tight, you get early satiety, feeling full after 3 bites, and that pressure can trigger the dyssynergia we just talked about.
So if the stomach won't relax, the diaphragm feels the pressure and freaks out.
Exactly. For the accommodation part, there are a few pharmacological options, though they are a bit hit or miss. Some doctors use neuromodulators like low-dose tricyclic antidepressants, not because the patient is depressed, but because those meds can dampen the hypersensitivity of the gut and help the smooth muscle relax. There is also research into drugs like buspirone, which has been shown in clinical trials to improve gastric accommodation by relaxing the fundus.
But Daniel was specifically asking about lifestyle and dietary strategies. If he is living with this daily, what can he do at the dinner table?
This is where we get into the practical, evidence-based stuff. First and foremost, and Daniel mentioned he had heard this, is meal frequency. If you have impaired gastric accommodation, you simply cannot eat a large three-course meal. Your stomach is literally telling you it is full. If you push past that, you trigger the whole cascade of bloating and distension.
So the small, frequent meal strategy isn't just a cliche. It is a mechanical necessity.
It really is. We are talking 5 or 6 small meals instead of 3 big ones. And the composition matters too. Fat is a major trigger for people without gallbladders, as Daniel probably knows. But fat also slows down gastric emptying. If the food sits in the stomach longer, it exerts more pressure for a longer period, which keeps that diaphragm in a state of panic.
So low fat, small meals? What about fiber? Usually we are told fiber is the answer to everything, but I have a feeling that might be different here.
Fiber is tricky. High fiber foods, especially raw vegetables, take up a lot of volume. If your goal is to minimize the physical volume in the stomach at any one time, you might actually want to lean toward cooked vegetables and lower fiber options during a flare-up. Daniel mentioned leafy greens. A big salad is actually one of the worst things for someone with abdominophrenic dyssynergia because it provides massive volume with very little caloric density. It stretches the stomach wall immediately.
That is so counterintuitive. You think you are being healthy by having a big salad, but you are actually triggering the mechanical glitch.
Exactly. It is also important to talk about how you eat. Chewing. I know it sounds like something your grandma would tell you, but for these conditions, it is vital. Digestion starts in the mouth. The more you break down the food before it hits the stomach, the less work the stomach has to do, and the faster it can move that food along. Also, avoiding carbonated drinks is huge. You don't want to add gas volume to a system that is already struggling with pressure management.
I also want to touch on the gut-brain part again. If this is a learned response, does stress management or even something like gut-directed hypnotherapy have a place here?
Absolutely. There is actually a lot of evidence for gut-directed hypnotherapy for functional bloating. It is not about being hypnotized in the movie sense. It is about using visualization and relaxation to calm the nervous system's response to gut sensations. If you can lower the overall alarm level of the brain, it is less likely to trigger that paradoxical diaphragm contraction. There are even apps now, like Nerva or Zimity, that provide these protocols digitally.
It makes sense. If the brain isn't on high alert, it won't overreact to a normal meal. So, for Daniel, it sounds like a multi-pronged approach is best. Retraining the breathing to fix the mechanical dyssynergia, using small, low-fat meals to manage the accommodation issue, and maybe some neuromodulation or hypnotherapy to calm the gut-brain connection.
And one more very practical tip, walking after meals. Not a power walk, just a gentle 10-minute stroll. It helps with gastric emptying, but more importantly, the upright posture and the rhythmic movement of walking can help reset the diaphragm and abdominal wall coordination. It is much harder for your body to maintain that weird, bloated posture when you are actively moving your legs and swinging your arms.
That is a great point. It is much easier to slump and let the distension take over when you are sitting on the couch right after a meal. Daniel mentioned wanting to hide away on the couch when it happens, but that might be the worst thing for the muscle coordination. Even just standing up and doing some of that lateral rib breathing can make a difference.
Exactly. And for anyone listening who has had their gallbladder out and is wondering why they still feel like they have digestive issues years later, you are not crazy. Post-cholecystectomy syndrome is a real thing, and these functional disorders like abdominophrenic dyssynergia are often the hidden culprits. It is also worth noting that this is more common in women, possibly due to hormonal influences on visceral sensitivity, though it affects everyone.
Well, this has been a deep dive. Daniel, thanks for sending that one in. It is a topic that affects so many people but gets very little airtime because it is so often dismissed as just common bloating.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. It is always good to have an excuse to look into the latest from the Barcelona group. They really are doing some of the most interesting work in gastroenterology right now.
If you are listening and you have been dealing with something similar, or if you have a completely different weird prompt you want us to explore, we would love to hear from you. You can find the contact form on our website at myweirdprompts.com. You can also search our entire archive of over 200 episodes there.
And hey, if you've been enjoying the show, please leave us a review on your podcast app or a rating on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show. We are a small, independent operation here in Jerusalem, and your support keeps us digging into these research papers every week.
All right, I think that is a wrap for episode 226. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next one.
See ya.
So, Herman, before we go, I was thinking about that rib breathing. Should we try a quick session right now? I feel like my intercostals are a bit tight from sitting here so long.
You know what? That is a great idea. Hands on the lower ribs, everyone. Actually, let's save the group exercise for the bonus feed. But seriously, it is amazing how much just a few minutes of focused breathing can change your internal state.
Very true. All right, everyone, thanks again. Check out myweirdprompts.com for the show notes and the archive. We will see you soon.
Bye for now.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.